So you wouldn't think you could find that many scientists whose careers were inspired by mystical experiences. But you know what? Here's another. Meet Andrew Newberg.
My own story with regard to just thinking about the universe started out as a kid, and I just always asked a lot of questions.
He's a neuroscientist.
I wanted to understand why people have different political perspectives, different religious perspectives. It was, to me, I felt like, well, if we're all looking at the same world, shouldn't we all come to the same conclusion? Ultimately, I came up with this idea that, well, if I was really going to figure out what was real and what we could know, that anything that I wasn't really sure of, I would put into what I would refer to as a kind of realm of doubt. Didn't mean that it was wrong. It didn't mean that it was right. It just meant that I wasn't sure at that moment. And so more and more, everything started to go into this realm of doubt. When I got between college and medical school, I had a kind of a summer off there, and I spent a lot of that summer in fairly deep contemplation, philosophical meditations, if you will, trying to resolve this issue. How could I get beyond all of these questions?
And then one day, something happened.
It was a nice summer day. I'd spent some time walking outside and just sort of thinking about things. As I kept striving for this, I was just getting more and more anxious. It was very upsetting to me that I couldn't get to an answer. And then finally, I had this experience where I came to this realization that ultimately there was nothing I could know. Everything was doubted. And there was no way that anything had any kind of solid foundation. Everything just blended into this one kind of a deep emptiness. But there was this incredible feeling of calm, I guess maybe a blissfulness, it may be the best way to describe it. I mean, ultimately, I know no other way of describing it other than to call it infinite doubt.
And with a little meditation or focus, he can still summon up that feeling. So what started as Andrew Newberg's personal experience of spiritual bliss or enlightenment or infinite doubt, whatever you want to call it, led to his scientific practice. Andrew is one of the founders of neurotheology, the study of the human brain on enlightenment. He's done hundreds of brain scan studies of meditating monks and praying nuns, psychic mediums, Pentecostal Sufi mystics, and he says they all have something in common.
Well, I think that there is certainly a neuroscientific signature of these experiences. One of the other fortunate things that I had the opportunity to do was actually to scan my own brain. And I was in an MRI scanner. We were doing some testing with it. And I said, well, listen, why don't you just do a scan? I'm just going to sit here and be quiet and let's see what happens. So I didn't tell them that I was going to kind of get back into that meditative state and just kind of rest within this infinite doubt. But I was able to do that at least for a short period of time, even while I was in the scanner. And what was fascinating was that when I looked at the scan, one of the areas of my brain, the parietal lobe, which is located in the back of my brain, and all of our brains, that was an area that actually started to shut down. And for a long time, we've been hypothesizing that this is an area that normally helps us to create our sense of self, and that during that kind of an experience, as we lose that sense of self, as the boundaries between ourselves and the world begin to blur, as the boundaries between other objects, everything in the world just kind of becomes a oneness, that there would be a shutting down, a decrease of activity in this area. And that's exactly what I actually saw in my own brain.
So do you think that it's only some lucky or spiritually gifted people who can do this, or are all human brains kind of essentially hardwired, you know, preset for this experience?
Well, I think it's the latter. I think the evidence suggests that pretty much anyone can have these experiences. That doesn't mean everyone will, but if we look at the data that we've collected over the last 20 years, which includes several hundred people getting their brain scans, and more recently, an online survey, and we have about 2,000 people who provided us information about who they are, their religious and spiritual background, their medical background, and the narratives about the experiences themselves. To me, the real take-home message is that everyone can have these experiences. And people sometimes think, oh, you know, that's only for, you know, the Mother Teresa's of the world or the Buddha's of the world. And the evidence suggests just the opposite. And then what I hope that we can do is use that information in a way that can help more effectively guide people down their own paths towards enlightenment.
But I just want to point out the kind of remarkable thing you're talking about, which is using science to improve people's spiritual lives. So there's this all kind of begs a question. We're talking about spiritual religious experience using the language of science. And isn't there something essentially reductionist about that? I mean, let's say I have an experience of a transcendent reality, you know, call it God or the divine or something I experience as a living reality outside the bounds of the merely human. I'm not sure I really want you to tell me that that's the result of electrochemical surges in my brain.
Well, you know, it's a very important question. And I think, you know, part of the way to understand this has to do with the causal relationships. The analogy I sometimes think about is there's a boat on the ocean. When we do a brain scan, are we looking at the boat or are we looking at the wake of the boat? Either way, it still tells us something interesting. It still tells us something about the boat. But the question is, how much can we actually know? And so I think, you know, we always have to be very careful in this field of neurotheology about what kinds of conclusions that we draw. And I think ultimately it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, it's probably a little bit of our biology creating the experience and a little bit of the experience creating the biology.
Biology is the symptom, not the cause.
Exactly. So, you know, there are many shamanic cultures throughout the world where they take a mushroom or something, and for them, the spiritual experience that ensues is not artificial. The mushroom was just a way of getting the person into the spiritual realm, which is a real thing. And, you know, the analogy that I always use is that I have very bad vision. So when I wake up in the morning, it's a very blurry world and I put on my glasses and suddenly it's clear. What if taking a drug or doing one of these practices is a way of just making the world clear for the brain? And maybe by clear, we're saying we're seeing the world in some kind of new consciousness level, a spiritual level, maybe even a supernatural level. These are the big questions. And again, it gets back to the infinite doubt too, that that's why I keep looking and we keep exploring.
Well, you've been studying this kind of stuff for quite a long time, but the thing that you've been working on recently is seeing if you can take all of this scientific information that you've accumulated and use it to help people have these experiences. So what have you figured out?
Sure. Well, I think that, we look at all of these experiences that people have. We look at the biology of how we understand what's going on in these experiences. Some people, enlightenment just hits no matter what they're doing. So those are the fortunate few. We have some wonderful examples of people basically just driving their car down the street and suddenly an experience happens to them. But but for most people, it is a bit of a process. And I think that there are a couple of steps that we've outlined. So one of the early steps, which anyone can do, is to think about what enlightenment means to them. What are they looking for? For me, it was sort of a striving for knowledge and understanding. And for other people, you know, it might be something different. And then the second part is preparing yourself for that journey and for that process. You know, if you go hiking in the woods, you know, you just don't walk out the door and hope for the best. I mean, you go and you take your backpack and you bring water and some food. And so, you know, part of it is to be prepared for the experience. And sometimes these experiences, they can be both wonderful and scary at the same time. They can transform your life. And so to some degree, you have to say to yourself, I'm all right with the fact that my life may change going forward. I think perhaps the most individualized aspect of all of this is finding the ritual, finding the individual path that works best for you. You know, if you're a Catholic, it might be doing the rosary or some particular prayer or going to church. If you're a Buddhist, it might be doing some type of specific meditative practice. Each person has to kind of find those different processes and those different rituals that work best for them. And as you do this on some type of fairly, you know, regular, repetitive basis, you ultimately allow yourself to let go. The idea of saying, okay, this now I'm just going to open myself up to whatever happens and whatever that experience is and just let it come to me. That's when you have these very dramatic changes in the brain that seem to be associated with those kinds of experiences.
So here's what seems to me one of the really big questions. If we're all walking around with these brains that have evolved to have this amazing capability, why? Like, why do you think our brains evolved to have the capacity for spiritual experience?
Well, that is a very interesting question, and there are a couple of different ways of going about thinking about that. You know, some people feel like this is something that they referred to as an epiphenomenon, that, you know, our brains developed so that we could try to interact with the world, and as we thought about things and solved problems and you know, connected with others socially, that this is something that kind of grew out of that process. And I think that to some degree that that's part of what probably did happen. But part of it is that our brain is capable of transcending itself, of changing from one moment of life to the next. It's part of what evolution is, which is to go beyond where you are now. And I think that these experiences are a kind of ultimate expression of that.
Do you feel at a gut level that we are evolving on a spiritual path?
It seems like we are. This is where it's always hard when you're kind of in the middle of it to know exactly where you're headed. We do keep evolving, and whether we are ultimately evolving to something which is a greater sense of being connected to the universe in some way, a greater sense of connecting to some sort of universal consciousness or universal reality, to what extent it is a truly spiritual evolution, or it's a more biological one, or some combination of the two, which to me seems perhaps the most likely. We'll have to see. But yeah, I think that because these experiences are so powerful for people, I think we'll ultimately get them to that kind of an enlightened perspective, an enlightened plane of looking at the world and truly understanding it in a way that we never have before.
Thank you. That is just great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andrew Newberg is director of research at the Myrna Brin Center of Integrative Medicine at Thomas Jefferson Hospital in Philadelphia. And he's the author with Mark Waldman of How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain.